Merkle Media.
Lashback Fridays here on Macro Aggressions, taking you back to February 2nd, 2021. Digital fascism. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible assets like gold and silver, maybe even converting your IRA and 401k as well, talk to our sponsor, Tony Arterburn, over at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. Just go to www.macroaggressions.gold. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a
Swangled
in I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macro Aggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you all doing out there? I certainly do appreciate you tuning in, downloading this. If you're listening in your car or you're at the gym, you know, do an extra set just because. We couldn't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsors. My Patriot Supply has been really great for us. They've set up our own little website specific to us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. If you go there, they'll give you a discount, $100 off of a 4-week supply of food. They deliver nationally and internationally as well. And look, if the last if the last year hasn't, you know, alerted you to the fact that things can change quickly, supply chains can be cut very easily. I mean, 2020, it's toilet paper. 2021, it could very well be bread, you know, so do something smart in advance. You listen to these crazy ass shows and your significant other tells you you're a conspiracy theorist, probably. At least benefit from it, right? At least you've got the insight to take a step. So when the shit goes down, your spouse will be like, where did all this emergency food come from? And it's like, because I've been listening to these shows and I got myself prepared. Now stay off my case. Just kidding. But anyway, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and see if they've got anything that you need there, survival food, gear, all that good stuff. Help to support a local business. We certainly do appreciate it. It supports the show as well. And look, we're in the Biden administration world now. You know, one lunatic leaves, another arrives. It is a revolving door of psychopathy. It is not entirely their fault. These are flawed individuals, but you know, that chose to get into this. Let me be clear. I'm not trying to give them a pass, but these are people that are severely disturbed. I mean, Joe Biden is a demented old man and an evil son of a bitch at that. I mean, it is my opinion of it, but it's my opinion of it based on a long list of you know, 40 plus years of being in office and getting caught lying and treating his staff like garbage and doing shady deals. I mean, I'm not trying to say that he's not any better or worse than the rest of them. He's just part of them. So we move into this new era. We think, well, things will change, right? Things will change. Trump's gone. Things have got to get better under Biden. Well, no, things will just get hidden under Biden because the media works to, they dragged anything Donald Trump did out into the light and complained about it for hours on end on CNN and MSNBC. To be fair, there's plenty of stuff that he did wrong that needed to be criticized, but it's just preposterous to get criticized from CNN for anything, really. But now we've got the Biden administration rolling in, and what can we expect from that? Well, we can expect silence from the media on any of the insane things that he's doing, following a pattern of silence when Obama was there. Now, they did that out of respect for Obama because they liked him. And the media was relatively quiet during the Bush administration, not because they liked him, but because they were scared to death of Dick Cheney. And also, they were terrified of being made to look weak for not supporting a president who was taking us to all these important wars in the Middle East. And any criticism of George W. Bush by the media could be perceived as being anti-American. So the media didn't really go after him as hard as they should have. Plus he's an establishment guy, you know, they're all at the same parties. So, and Bill Clinton, same thing. They covered for him. It really wasn't until we saw Trump that we got to look at how the media just, when they hate somebody, when they're vindictive and they go after them, they can make their lives really difficult. Now they've got Biden. So now it's back to normal. Decency again, right? Big smile while you're drone bombing the Middle East. But at least those drone operators will be transgendered lesbian women in wheelchairs, you know, because diversity. But one thing that isn't going to change is the role of big tech. It's this path that we are on to digital fascism. If anything, it's getting ramped up, not slowed down. It's a terrifying look into where we're headed. I mean, the first 6 months of 2020 have proved that most human beings now live in a new kind of totalitarian state. A digital society that has the following characteristics: mass surveillance, social engineering, forced conformity, propaganda and censorship, different valuations of people. We're seeing, with Biden, we're getting the benevolent dictatorship. Under Trump, we had the malevolent dictatorship. But the ideas that are being pushed out through the big tech world, online, things like that, it is causing people to view reality in a much different way. They're being faced with decisions and concepts that they've never even considered before. All under the guise of sustainability, you know, this protecting the digital society, you know, protecting the host, all these things. So you're talking about things like concepts like predictive policing and relativity of human rights and euthanasia for sustainability and unethical experiments with human beings. You know, it's a dark, it's a dark winter, as Biden says. That they've been, you know, that we as a collectively, as humanity, have been manipulated. Our behaviors have been manipulated through the COVID pandemic. It's the biggest experiment of all time. I mean, it's not in a scientific sort of actual way, not in that sort of way. It's a psychological experiment, more so than anything. I mean, the science is down the ladder in terms of importance here. Science is constantly changing, as we see, but the psychology of this is fascinating. You know, deadly and horrifying, of course, but still fascinating. Now, it's been mentioned often that big data is necessary to fight terrorism, cyber threats, and climate change. And the government is telling the people that they are in charge using big data to help stop terrorism, cyber threats, and climate change. Now, we know what's really going on. The government doesn't want to stop terrorism. The government creates terrorism. So it's a lie right there. Cyber threats, you know, all this. The government has divisions, not just the United States government. Maybe I can't say every single country has a cyber threats component to their military, but I'd say if they don't have one, they're thinking about it, you know, if they can afford it. It's real. It's necessary. People are, the vast majority of people feel safe knowing that the government's looking after them. They feel safe that the government and the big tech companies are partnering up and using this term big data to fight terrorism and cyber threats and climate change. Because after all, you know, you don't want to be, you don't want this whole thing to go away, have the sea levels rise and swallow you all up. And we know climate change is super duper real because Barack Obama just bought a $14.5 million house right on the coastline. And it has to be real. Otherwise, he would never think, maybe it's not real. Maybe it's all bullshit, right? I mean, of course it's all bullshit. But this is where we are right now. We have the vast majority of the population turning to the government and big tech to solve the problems that government and big tech created, and then acting surprised when nothing gets fixed. This is, this is not a direction that we want to head, not in any way to actually solve problems. Now, if you want to talk about problems and pretend like they're getting fixed, you know, like the media does, or you could do an article, you could do a whole story on 60 Minutes about cyber threats and cybersecurity and what we're doing to stop them and everything. Okay, great. And then, you know, and people will watch that episode and go, oh, I feel so much better knowing that Lieutenant Colonel blah, blah, blah is in charge of making sure that the Russians don't steal all my money out of my online banking account. The people that are offering the solution to the problem are the ones causing the problem. We know this. We understand this is the Hegelian dialectic. It's the problem, reaction, solution methodology. And that is laid out in the open for everybody to see with big tech. Over 2020, we were introduced to this almost like a blending of big tech and big pharma. And I think a lot of people that aren't really paying attention see that as a good thing. They think, well, if we're going to fight this coronavirus epidemic that's literally killing billions of people, sarcasm font, we need all hands on deck. So if that means the government and big tech working together on this, then fine. We don't have a problem with that. Just make it go away. Problem, we've got the coronavirus, everyone's going to die. Reaction, oh no, I don't want to kill my grandma. Government, big tech, big pharma, please come in and save me. solution. Mandatory vaccines, digital health passports. Can't get on a plane without proof of your immunization. Do you see where this is going? They create the problem and then offer you the solution. It's genius if you can pull it off. It's psychopathic, of course, but it's, I mean, it, listen, it's, you credit where credit is due. It's a big idea and it's a ballsy way to try and pull it off. But these people have, they've done it because they're in fear. And that's really what this boils down to, is it's really just about fear. Fear of coronavirus killing you, fear of the unknown, fear of losing your job, fear of, you know, the economy being destroyed by the virus. You know, people gave up their basic rights to have a job, to trading, to expression, to privacy. They gave up all these things. They gladly gave up all these things. They couldn't give these things up fast enough in exchange for what? What'd you get, really? You got locked up while your job was destroyed? You got scared into your house while your mortgage was due? You've been had. Right? They got us. Now, most of us listening to this, we understand the game. We see what's happening. This is why you're listening to shows like this, because you either have an understanding of this and you want more information, or you're just coming into it and you're feeling a little bit disoriented. But look, I assure you, this all makes sense. The digital fascism that we're experiencing is not accidental. They plan these things well in advance. That's why they have Bilderberg. That's why they have Davos, World Economic Forum's Davos conference. That's why they have the Council on Foreign Relations and the Atlantic Council. They get together and they talk about where they want to take things. These people don't leave it to chance. They're not reactive. They're very proactive. They set these agendas years in advance, which is the reason why Anthony Fauci in 2017 can make a statement on camera that says, well, Donald Trump's going to have a rough presidency. He's going to get a pandemic during his term. How the fuck would you ever know that? And what a weird thing to say, unless you know something we don't know. And Anthony Fauci knows something we don't know. Well, he knows a lot of things that we know, that we all know. I mean, we know who he is. We know. You know, I did a 3-hour group podcast on our Union of the Unwanted show, which I highly recommend people check out. That's a group podcast with me, Midnight Mike from OBDM, Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat, and Ricky Verandas from The Ripple Effect. And we've been doing these shows twice a month. And we had Dr. Judy Mikovits on. She spent 3 hours with us talking about this. And she knows who Fauci is inside and out. He got her fired. They have a big problem with one another. And she explained it. She laid this out. Some people know what's happening before it happens, not because they're psychic, but because they're in on it. And the march towards digital fascism is not accidental. You know, they think about, now it's an ambitious plan, to be sure. But when you bring it into existence slowly, we're talking about technology here with this digital fascism. But when you bring this technology in slowly, people are able to adapt to it and incorporate it into their lives, and it becomes easier to use. You get more familiar with it. You know, you're like, oh, this is an iPhone. What is an iPhone? And then next thing, oh, it's an iPad. And you're like, oh, this is interesting. And now you've got like your 3.5-year-old can use the iPad and pull up, you know, whatever videos they want to use or watch. So you see how this works. It seems complicated at first. It gets normalized. It gets easier. It gets integrated into our life, and it never goes away. So that's why everyone's, you know, these companies like Google, and Facebook and Twitter. They are building a profile of you. Well, they have a profile on you, but they're constantly adding to it. Now, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound that bad, because building a digital profile of you, well, look, when you sign up for certain websites that ask you to, you know, put in your date of birth and this and what's the security questions and things like that, you're building kind of a profile of yourself as well. I mean, so in and of itself, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But the problem is that this digital persona of you that they're building is really like a digital voodoo doll. And they can use it to find your pressure points, to put the needles in you right where they need to be in order to get you to do the things that they need you to do. Because they know you. They know how you act. They know where you shop online. They know where you're looking. They know what you're looking for. They know the secret things you're not supposed to be looking at, but you are anyway. They know a lot. You know, and this isn't even a secret. Gmail, which is Google's email, free email service, reads the contents of your emails and then tailors advertising accordingly. If you're writing lots of emails about these, you know, these cats I've got and the cat litter, and there's cat litter all over the place, and I've been scooping cat litter for, you know, 15 minutes and blah, blah, blah. Tomorrow, the ads that you see are going to be about cat litter, maybe even tonight. So that is creepy. But, you know, from a marketing standpoint, it was bound to happen. Every advertiser, you know, would have loved to have gotten their hands on this sort of information early on. But it's not until much later on in the process, like where we are now or over the last 15 years or so, that Google has been able to take advantage of things like that to really consolidate all this information and paint a fairly accurate picture of you. It's advertising, you know, so it's not always going to connect with you, we've all seen it. We've had those creepy experiences where you're talking about something, some obscure topic, where you got your cell phone next to you, and then next thing you know, you start to see ads for that very thing, and you're going, is my phone listening to me? The answer is, yeah, it is listening to you. Your Amazon Echo is listening to you. Your computer's listening to you. Your smart TV is listening to you. They're all listening. The problem is, who are they talking to? Who's my goddamn toaster talking to? That's what I want to know. It's probably those bitches over at Amazon, probably trying to automatically order bread. You know, and so all of these things are kind of masked in convenience. I mean, then if they said, we want to install a spy device inside your home, would you allow us to? Amazon says that. You say, get the fuck out of here. I'm not going to do that. Are you out of your mind? And they say, oh, well, let me rephrase this. We'd like to sell you an Amazon Echo. It can do X, Y, and Z for you. It can do all of these things. You just tell it, play this, play iHeartRadio. Hey, Alexa, order me pastrami sandwiches for the next week. Whatever it is. And you go, oh, that's great. I'll take one. So you invited the spy agency into your house after all. You just didn't know it. It just needed to be sold to you as a convenience. It needed to be repackaged in a way that made sense to you. Sell the benefits. Sell the benefits. Anybody that's been in sales knows that. So that's what these things have done. They've sold us on the benefits of them, which we have acknowledged and we have invited into our house and we've incorporated into our lives. But there's a price for that. This convenience doesn't come for free. They want your data. It's more valuable than oil to them. It's the new oil. And with that data, they know how to manipulate you. Now, that's a problem, of course, because once they have the data on you and they paint this picture of you and they make this digital voodoo doll of you, and you get out of line with them, they know exactly how to shut you down. or turn you off, because you get used to this. You get used to the conveniences of email, and you get used to the conveniences of having, you know, being able to get on your computer and open up a, you know, a website and do all these things and do your online banking and pay your taxes. And you get into that comfort of having all of those options available to you. And then you do something wrong and they take them away. Now, we've talked about this with regard to the social credit system that is, you know, has been rolled out in China, is in the process of being rolled out in the United States under a very different sort of covert program. And we've talked about it in terms of the social credit score or system that uses a score to rank you. Very dangerous, very devious. But once again, it's going to be sold as a benefit. And we've talked about how the new, you know, terminology of domestic terrorism is a big thing. So it won't be long before big tech is in charge of determining and letting the government know who the domestic terrorists are, or who may become a domestic terrorist. If we got to go to Philip K. Dick world with this, you know, the predictive policing, the Minority Report, pre-crime division, and things like that, who might become a domestic terrorist in the future? Think about that. Think about all the ways in which that can go wrong. I think you understand that. I think it's obvious for people to see where it could be headed. But the most important factor in all of this is our awareness. We need to be aware of what we're doing with technology. You know, when the service is free, like Gmail or YouTube or whatever, then you have to sort of ask some questions. Well, how are they making their money? You know, the service is free. I'm using it. What are they getting in exchange from me? Well, they're getting your data. And it might not seem like much to you, and it might not even matter to you. You may not care that you're leaving digital crumbs for anybody to follow you. That might not alarm you too much. But I'll tell you what, I bet you I know something that will alarm you. Digital rights activists reacted with alarm to a report published detailing how the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, which is under the Department of Defense, in recent years bought databases of U.S. smartphone location data without first obtaining search warrants. This is alarming. And it took Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon to get involved in this. And no, I don't trust any of these people, of course, but he asked the DIA to clarify its interpretation of this court case, Carpenter versus United States in 2018. It was a Supreme Court decision barring law enforcement agencies from requesting personal location information from a cell phone company without first obtaining a search warrant from a judge. Meaning you can't just go take somebody. You can't just say, I want, like, you can't, if you're the police, you can't contact AT&T and say, I need all of this guy's information. I need cell phone location, date, and I need to know where he was, where it was pinging, which towers it was hitting off of. I need to know who he talked to and all. You can't ask them for that without first getting a search warrant from a judge. Now, I think that's reasonable. I'm not trying to say that, you know, I mean, judges can rubber stamp that stuff and just give it to anyone. And in fact, they do a lot of times. So I'm not trying to pretend that somehow obtaining a search warrant from a judge makes everything okay, because I don't think that. But at least you have to do that. You know, you at least have to pretend to go through those steps, whether or not the judge just, you know, rubber stamps this request and passes it along with every request that comes across his bench. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But the idea that the DIA does not see this case as applying to them. They said that they don't need it. They say that their decision to require a judicial warrant endorsing purchase or use of commercially available data for intelligence purposes is unnecessary. They said, listen, if we want to buy this data, we'll buy it. If we want to spy on these people, we'll spy on them. So, this isn't just foreign data, things like that. You know, this was happening inside the United States. This was location data for inside the United States. In fact, they don't differentiate between U.S. and foreign location data. It's just data so, you know, this is a gigantic problem because the department, the DIA is out buying your information. They say, you know, it's just available, commercially available. Yeah, it's commercially available on the dark web by hackers that are pulling all this information off. The military industrial complex and the surveillance state work very well together. And you can think about where this is going. So one of the things that they talked about in this story was how the DIA was buying location data of a Muslim group, a Muslim prayer app with over 98 million downloads worldwide. And they were using it for, quote, counterterrorism. They were buying location data that was harvested from a Muslim prayer app. Not a little one either, one that had almost 100 million downloads worldwide. And they're looking at all of the places where the Muslim prayer app was used, assuming it was used by Muslims. And we know how much the American government likes to kill brown people in foreign countries, and they consider Muslims to be a really good target. Think about that. Now, listen, it's one thing if it's like, I don't know, a restaurant that appeals to Muslim tastes was using this data to target their advertising. I mean, whatever. I mean, that would be different. But when the U.S. military is buying it, and we have a history of Anwar al-Awlaki, an American, being blown to smithereens, you know, And we know that the statistics show that from the Gulf War on, civilian casualties during these wars have been 90%, as opposed to World War I when the civilian casualty rate was 10%. World War II, I think it was 25%. We're at 90%. 90% civilian casualties, meaning if you're trying to blow up a car with 10 terrorists in it, there's a pretty good chance you'll kill 100 people. You'll get those 10 terrorists and you'll get 90 civilians with it. And America considers that to be a trade-off they're willing to make. They're fine with that percentage. So think about this. They're then randomly using this data that they gather that they bought somewhere or stole from a Muslim prayer app. And they assume that, you know, one of their guys that they want to get has that phone with them, has it in their pocket. So they say, oh, well, we see where the location data is or this guy. And so they just drop a, you know, they send a drone out there to shoot a missile at it, blow it all up, blow up this, you know, it's parked at a school, blow up the whole school. Who cares, right? This is where we're headed. With this is out in the open. This isn't even like, yeah, the ACLU is getting involved and they're filing lawsuits and things like that, but too little too late, you know. The problem is, and Ron Wyden said this too, the problem is that we've got so much data flowing around that the governments can essentially buy their way around the Fourth Amendment. And it's true. And that should be alarming for people. And not only that, but the normalization of it, where the common person has this belief that, well, if you're getting terrorists, you know, maybe you shouldn't be out there doing terror then. You know, what? This is a slippery slope. Government and big tech working together with the military, you know, what could possibly go wrong, right? But it gets even worse. It gets even creepier than this. If you remember one of the episodes we've talked about, and I've talked about this on other shows, specifically Sean Atwood's show in the UK, there's a guy named, there's a company called Hanson Robotics. David Hanson runs that. And he partnered up with a guy named Ben Goertzel. And they built this robot called Sophia Doll. And if you remember the Sophia Doll, Sophia Robot. Sophia Robot was, like a human-sized robot, kind of the back of her head is opened up. And she was paraded around a conference in Saudi Arabia, and they made a whole big PR spectacle of her saying, oh, we're going to grant her citizenship and she's going to be this ambassador and all this stuff. And then I went into explaining that Ben Goertzel then took $6.5 million from Jeffrey Epstein to create the Little Sophia robot doll, which was an AI-based emotional support doll for girls ages 8 years old and up. Creepy, right? Totally, totally creepy. Well, guess what? Hanson Robotics is at it again. And they are set to launch a mass rollout of human-like robots that can compete with human workers, with human beings, something that the founder says is much needed to keep people safe in the age of the coronavirus. Now, it's so obvious, man. It's so obvious what they're doing. Coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever. This has been the cover story to allow all of these maniacs to just indulge themselves in whatever fantasy they have. As long as they can find an angle to wrap it around COVID, then it's for the betterment of humanity. It's for saving society. And we got to get these stores back opened up. So whatever we can do, you know, and the rest of us are just throwing our hands up in the air going, just make it stop, you maniacs. Just stop with the lockdowns and stop with all this insanity. But when you're Hanson Robotics or groups like this, you determine that this is, you say things like the world of COVID-19 is going to need more and more automation to keep people safe. Well, really, it needs more automation to keep people safe from a virus with a 99.74% survival rate in the most compromised section of humanity, or a 99.97% survival rate. We need robots now to keep everybody safe from something with a 0.03% chance of killing you? No, what we need is to be safe from people like Hanson Robotics and these, listen, I saw Terminator. Didn't you? I saw what happens. I'm telling you, man, this robot Sophia, they're going to give her an AK-47 at some point. It's going to be on. I watched RoboCop too. I saw what happened when the robot went berserk in the boardroom. So always sell the benefits, you know? So Sophia says things like, this is the robot talking. Sophia is the first doll, first robot. Grace is the new robot, the new version, specifically built to help out in the healthcare industry. And so Grace says, social robots like me can help take care of the sick or elderly in many corners of healthcare and medical uses. I can help communicate, give therapy, and provide social stimulation even in different situations. Think about that for a second. this robot is going to provide social stimulation, even in difficult situations. You know what that means, right? It means when you're locked down during these lockdowns for a virus that isn't going to kill you, you can have a robot to talk to instead of your family. Isn't that great? Problem solved, everybody. We solved it. We solved the problem. You know, Thanksgiving and all that nonsense of we were talking about can't have that many people. Who cares about Thanksgiving? You've got a robot that loves you and wants to talk to you. David Hansen said his sales pitch is that the robots can provide for people who are lonely and socially isolated. Well, gee, I wonder why they're lonely and socially isolated. I wonder whose great idea that was. They're only lonely and socially isolated because the government is forcing them to be lonely and isolated. They didn't wake up one day and decide they're going to do this out of the blue. This is a government mandated thing. He goes on to say people need to be isolated from each other because to be around people is dangerous these days. David Hansen, go fuck yourself. You know what? It's guys like you that are making this world a cesspool. You know, because you come out and say that people are the problem and being around other people is dangerous these days. No, no. Being around people like you is dangerous. Being around people like Fauci is dangerous. Bill Gates. These people are the real dangers. But in classic projection formula, you know, as they do, they project all of their shortcomings onto the rest of us. And we're supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to thank David Hansen for the development of this, of these robots that are going to come with help, you know, help us all out. Should we thank Ben Goetzel too? And Jeffrey Epstein for the little Sophia? Because you guys were working on that as well. So I have questions for you. Where are you getting your money? Why are you going to a convicted pedophile to get money to build dolls for little kids? Why are you telling everybody to be afraid of people? Singapore authorities hired a robot dog from Boston Dynamics to monitor people's social distance at the parks. Remember that? I'm not advocating for someone to pick that thing up and throw it in the lake. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. You know, have you ever seen Black Mirror? The warehouse episode where the robot dog goes looking for that guy? Yeah, that's where we're going. And David Hansen wants to take you there. You know, along with all these guys. Peter Thiel. He's on the Open Cog Society. He's managing this AI. He's working on it. You know, technology is not necessarily a bad thing. It's helped a lot of people. I'm communicating to you all through this technology. The technology is not a bad thing. It's this. I've said this before. I'm sure I'll wind up saying it again. It's much like when people talk about the idea of a gun. Is a gun a bad thing? Well, it could be. It just depends on whose hands it's in. Much like this technology. Is the idea of a robot that's going to come help you a bad thing? No, not inherently. But it depends on who's creating the robot. Is it Skynet creating the robots? Because, you know, we saw that movie. It didn't end well. Listen, if it was Bob Ross, the guy that paints happy clouds, that is like, I created this robot and it's going to be happy robot and we're going to do, I'd be like, cool. That sounds neat. Let's check it out. But when David Hansen and Ben Goetzel and these guys are involved in it, no, thank you. No, not interested. Because this is a slippery slope and you see where this is going. And it's not one of those things where you go, oh, I hope this doesn't fall into the wrong hands. It's already in the wrong hands. It's been developed by the wrong hands. Who do you think financed Boston Dynamics? It's DARPA. It's InQtel. Now, Boston Dynamics just sold it. It just got bought by Hyundai. So, Now the robots are just going to be even better built because they'll be built in Korea, you know? They'll have killer features, you know? Big flat panel. It's just frustrating because they know we're looking for new technologies. Listen, I lived in Vegas forever, and you have the Consumer Electronics Show every January, and hundreds of thousands of people show up for that. Everyone wants to see what the new technology is. We like that stuff. It's cool. You can geek out for this new technology. I've got a 175-inch TV. You're like, I've got to have that. Well, but there is a dark side to this, a potential dark side to it. And it's just important for us to think about it in that way. And in this push, you know, fascism, when I talk about digital fascism, I think it might be important for us, probably should have started with this, to define what fascism really is. Because you see, there's two things that are very similar. There's fascism, which is the blending of corporations and the state for the benefit of the state. And then there's corporatism, which is the blending of corporations and the state for the benefits of the corporations. Now, what do you think we have in, say, the United States? Do we have fascism or do we have corporatism? I feel like we have both. I feel like we have a blending of the corporations and the state for the benefit of both of them. Now, they want different things. The corporations want money and they want control and they want monopolies and they want to privatize their gains and socialize their losses. You know, if anything bad, like airline industry, you know, they want the government to step in and tilt the playing field in their benefit. That's what corporations want. That's what it's considered a win if you get those things. And those things benefit the corporations, then you'd say, well, we have corporatism. And we do. We have that. What does the government want? The government wants control over you because they're scared of you, because they should be, because there's way more of us than there are of them. And they're up to no good in Washington, D.C. Not all of them, most of them. And they don't want you to know about that. So see, they view us as the enemy. They view us as the problem. So what does government want out of this? They want control and they want access to the information about what you are doing. And they have that. So is it corporatism or is it fascism? I mean, it's both. But for the sake of this conversation, we're going to call it digital fascism. And that is the blending of corporations with government in order to benefit the government. Corporations will benefit too, but let's just take this in terms of benefiting the government. Does it benefit the government to know which websites you're on, who you're talking to, how long you're talking to them, where you're talking to them, what you're using for your banking, what you're spending through your credit? Of course. They want all that information. Like I said, because they're scared of you. They're building a case on you. If you ever cross them, that's the thing that Snowden said that got lost in the shuffle, I think. Snowden's talking about all these things, you know, where they can access this and they can access this and you can get, and we're going, yeah, well, we know that. But the problem is that he rightly identified. The problem is 15 years from now, you get on the other side, you get on the wrong side of a government agency, let's just say, for something. And they want to get you. They now can retroactively go back through everything online about you. Every email you've sent, every transaction you've made, every phone call you've placed, every email that you've been a part of, every tweet you've liked, every Facebook post you've shared. They can go back and find something on you. Even if they have to take it out of context, they'll find something on you. So the government is winning in this because, well, first of all, if you were a government that was of high moral standards, don't laugh. this is a thought experiment. I'm not saying there's actually one. I'm just saying if there was one, they wouldn't need to know all this information about you because they would be of the belief they're not doing anything wrong to you. So you don't have a reason to be mad at them. You don't have a reason to revolt against them. But what do you think the American government, how do you think the American government views us? They know what they're doing to us, and they know we should be mad if we ever figured it out. They don't view us as equals, not even close. They are suspicious of us because they are projecting their guilt onto us because they know they are the ones that are guilty. That's why guilty people, that's why the guy comes in ranting and raving at his wife. You're cheating on me. I know you're cheating on me. You know what's happening in that situation? That guy's cheating on her and he's projecting it on her. That's what the government's doing to us. They're a bunch of lying scumbags. Not all of them. Full disclaimer. Not everyone. Okay. But collectively, the government is a bunch of lying scumbags that are constantly coming up with new ways to steal money from you and remove your rights. And they rightfully know and understand that you should be pissed about this. So they see you as a threat, not because you're an actual threat, but because if we ever figure out all the things that they're up to, we're going to come after them. And they view that as a threat. Now, that's common sense to us, right? Maybe don't do all those things to us and then you don't have to worry, right? That's how we would see it. But this is the government we're talking about. So they don't think about things like that. They're concentrating on how can we gather and compile as much information about the plebs as we can to later use it against them if they ever try to challenge our authority. They try to challenge us in court. They try to challenge us individually on something. We just dig back through the archives with the help of our buddies in big tech, who we rigged the playing field to give them a monopoly. And we take that information and we use it to protect ourselves. That's how the government views it. They take that information, they're going to hold on to it. So we're just in a very dangerous position here where our reliance on technology is contributing to our own demise. But it's so subtle and it's kind of kept out, because you're focused on the benefits and not the downsides to this, it becomes a little more difficult to understand how devious it can be, if that makes sense, because it's so incremental. It's just a little here. It's a little one right that you're waving here, or, one thing here, one thing there. Next thing you know, you've given away all of your privacy. I'll tell you where things are headed, and you can take this to the bank. Watch for the increasing demonization of encryption. It's coming. They hate encryption. Now, they hate it because currently, with the current computing power, some of the encryption services are impossible for them to crack, and they don't like that. They want a monopoly on secrecy. They don't want you having any secrets from them. They keep secrets from us, but they don't want you having any secrets. It's like a parent-child relationship, right? They don't have to tell the kids what all is going on. They tell the kids how to behave and what they're doing, and if you're doing something wrong, we're going to punish you and you're doing something wrong. The kid doesn't get the chance to say to the parents, hey, but you're a bunch of hypocrites because you're doing things 10 times worse than me. That's the relationship that we have with our government. Watch for encryption to be targeted next. Got a Proton Mail account? I do. By the way, if you want to reach out to the show, the Octopus of Global Control at protonmail.com. They'll crack that. Hell, they've got D-Wave, Jordy Rose-built supercomputers that can already crack that encryption. They're operating in... the quantum computers, and I'm not qualified to speak on the depths of quantum computing, to be fair, but quantum computing and the use of qubits and things like that takes computing power to a whole new stratosphere. So to be clear, there will come a time when all of the encryption that we have will be useless. But currently, the way it's set up, they view encryption as us trying, as the kid in their bedroom with the door shut and it locked, and the parent saying, "You can shut the door, but don't lock it. If I need to get in there, I need to know that that door is unlocked, there's a fire or whatever. Shut the door, I'll give you some privacy, but please don't lock it." And so if you've had that sort of dynamic at your home, you know, if you're a parent, you've had kids and you've had that situation, that might make the encryption conversation a little bit more real, or at least put it in terms that you can relate to. But this is a one-sided request. See, they will want all of our consumer-grade encryption equipment to go away and to be non-existent. But they'll never give up theirs. You know, I mean, this is not a fair or reasonable ask on their behalf. You know, in conjunction with encryption and things like that, there's a new method of helping out the social media platforms that want this. And that is the use of rats, convincing people to be informants. Twitter is, just launched a crowdsource feature that they intend to use to combat slander and misinformation, which is, you know, in a similar way to like the way Wikipedia flags misleading information too. So what they want to do is create they're creating a project called Birdwatch, which is a standalone section of Twitter that will be available to a small set of users, you know, people that, you know, really want to rat out, you know, real hardcore rat enthusiasts here, you know, that want to identify information in tweets that they believe to be misleading or false and write notes that provide informative context. This is from Twitter Vice President Vice President of Product Keith Coleman. He said, "We believe this approach has the potential to respond quickly when misleading information spreads, adding context that people trust and find valuable." Well, so initially the participants are going to label tweets as accurate or inaccurate. And then those ratings are going to be assembled into a Birdwatch profile, which will be separate from a Twitter profile, but not unlike Reddit's using user rating system. So Twitter has this fantasy of creating a community of snitches, I mean bird watchers, that can eventually help moderate and label tweets. Though initially the labels created through this program will be private. If you see something, say something, right, Janet Napolitano? Are there any Jews hiding in your basement? I mean, this is where we're going. A bunch of rats on Twitter that are going to label your tweet true or false. I can't wait for that. It sounds like nothing to worry about, right? Just a bunch of uneducated randoms that are going to go through your tweets, potentially take them out of context, not understand your sense of humor, like mine, and ban you. Because your version of the truth doesn't match up to their version of the truth. Well, I'm sorry. If I've got a 22-year-old bird watcher that doesn't know shit from Shinola, that's going to call me out on one of my tweets that is fully researched, backed up by hundreds of hours of researching for multiple books that I've written, hundreds of podcasts, and they're just going to randomly decide that my information's fake just because they never heard it before? No, thank you. Not interested in that. And I don't think anyone would be. And this goes back to Eric Schmidt, former head of Alphabet, the parent company of Google, when he asked an interviewer, he was being interviewed, and he asked the interviewer, what happens when you perform a Google search? And the interviewer goes, I don't know, I type in a question, get a, you know, 50,000 answers. And his response is, and that's a bug. You know, Eric Schmidt said, that's a bug. You should only get one answer. He says, we have more bugs than any company out there. You know, we're working on them, but in theory, you should ask your question and only get one answer. I understand what he's saying. If the question is, what is 2 + 2? You get one answer, 4. But I also read the book 1984. So, in that book, 2 + 2 = 5. They made it so that it equaled 5 in all of the, you know, and how that affects your brain. Just go with it. So when Eric Schmidt says that there should only be one answer, he's not talking about a math question. He's talking about deep questions and that we have about the way government works. Is Joe Biden to be trusted? Yes. The answer is yes. There is one answer and one answer only. It is yes. Is Donald Trump a bad person? Yes. There is one answer and one answer only. No nuance. No context. No debate. No, well, you know, he was good to me, but he's bad to other people. No. Black and white. One answer. Who does that benefit? Does that benefit it, the government or big business? I don't know. I'll tell you what, it doesn't benefit us. If you like this show, share it, please. It's very helpful. Rate the show too. When you're done listening and some of the players that you're using, it'll give you the option to do that. It means a lot to me as far as, you know, helping rig the algorithms, and considering we just did a program talking about how awful all these tech companies are. Listen, they have algorithms that, do certain things to help boost the profiles of show. I have no problem playing their own game and rigging the system. So please, if you like this episode, rate the show, say nice things about it. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll see you soon.
This podcast is supported by Morgan Stanley.
At Morgan Stanley, old school hard work meets bold new thinking to help you see untapped possibilities and relentlessly work with you to make them real.
To learn more, visit morganstanley.com/YUS. Investing involves risk. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC.
This podcast is supported by Morgan Stanley.
Old school wisdom with a passion for what's possible. That's what you get from the Morgan Stanley client experience. You get listening more than talking, and a personalized plan built on insights and innovative technology. You get grit, vision, and the creativity to guide you through a changing world. Old school grit, new world ideas. Morgan Stanley.
To learn more, visit morganstanley.com/YUS. Investing involves risk. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC.
This podcast is supported by Morgan Stanley.
At Morgan Stanley, we see the world with the wonder of new eyes, helping you discover untapped possibilities and relentlessly working with you to make them real. Because grit and vision working in lockstep puts you on the path to your full potential. Old school grit, new world ideas. Morgan Stanley.
To learn more, visit morganstanley.com/YUS. Investing involves risk. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC.